Obviously, the kidnapping of a vicar's family had sparked one of the most intense manhunts in the history of Mother Church, yet not one single sign of the culprits had been discovered. Over the 5 days which had followed, Samuel had borne up nobly under the strain, as day after day passed with no ransom demand, no threat, no word at all. Howard was quite certain the Inquisition was still watching his brother, like King Wyverns waiting to pounce, hoping for some break, some communication, which would lead it to Lisbeth. After so long, though, even Clinton's agents seemed to be giving up hope of that. And it was probably Lisbeth's disappearance which had inspired some of the Circle's other members to make arrangements for their own families. Howard hoped those arrangements had been in time and that they were going to prove effective. "And I hope, pray, the others understand why we couldn't warn them directly." In his own mind, Howard had narrowed the suspects to no more than half a dozen. The problem was that he didn't know which of those half-dozen might have turned informant, betrayed them all to Clinton, revealed the existence and membership of the Organization of Reformists. For that matter, he might have been wrong. The traitor might not be one of the people he was convinced it had to be. And they could warn none of the Circle's members without warning all of them, including the traitor. Had they done that, Clinton would have struck with instant, vicious power, rather than waiting until what he judged to be the perfect moment. Waiting, Howard was certain, so that he could savor the sweet bouquet of his coming triumph over the men who had dared to challenge his authority. And so they'd said nothing, using the time while Clinton waited to do what little they could to mitigate the blow when he finally pounced. Getting all of the junior bishops and archbishops they could out of Zion where they might be safe. Alerting their network of correspondents and agents outside the innermost circle to quietly prepare the deepest bolt holes they could contrive. "Thank God I never married," Howard thought. "Maybe that was another way I had less faith than Samuel, because I was never willing to trust God enough to give up those hostages to someone like Clinton." "I understand Corus arrived this evening," he said out loud, and Samuel smiled faintly at his younger brother's obvious effort to find something safe to talk about. "Yes, so I heard," he replied, and shook his head. "That must have been a nightmare of a journey this time of year."
"I'm sure it was, but I doubt the thought particularly bothered Clinton or Trenaire," Howard said sourly. "I suppose we should be grateful they didn't insist he dragged the boy along with him."
"I'm sure they saw no need to," Samuel shrugged. "He's only a little boy, Howard. For at least the next several years, Divan's going to do what he's told by his elders, simply because that's what he's accustomed to doing.
I imagine Clinton figures there's plenty of time to impress him with the realities of his position, let's say, before he gets old enough to turn into a headstrong young prince." "Assuming he and Trenaire are willing to let the boy grow up at all." Howard's tone was harsh, bitter, yet it was less bitter than his eyes.
"Assuming that, yes," Samuel was forced to concede. "I've prayed about it. Of course I'd feel more optimistic if it didn't seem so evident. God has decided to let things work their own way out." Howard's jaw muscles tightened again as he fought down yet another stab of anger. Still, as Samuel had pointed out more than once, God wouldn't have given man free will if he hadn't expected him to use it. And that meant those who chose to do evil could do evil, which automatically implied that other men, and even little boys, could and would suffer the consequences of those evil actions. No doubt it truly was all part of God's great plan, but there were times, like now, when it seemed unnecessarily hard on the victims.
"Well, I hope Corus is as smart as I've always heard he is," Howard said after a moment. "That boy and his sister are going to need every edge they can find if they're going to survive."
This time, Samuel only nodded, his eyes softening briefly with affection. So, like his brother, he thought, to be worrying about a little boy and a teenaged girl he'd never even met. That was the Temple Guardsman in him, the pugnacious protective streak which had driven him to serve God first with a sword, and only later with his heart and mind. He was glad Howard already knew how deeply he loved him, that neither of them had to say it at this time, in this place. "And on that note," Howard said, glancing at the clock on the wall, the clock which, like every other clock in the temple, always kept perfect, precisely synchronized time, and then climbing out of his chair. "I'm afraid I have to be going. I've got a couple of errands I need to take care of tonight."
"Anything I can help with?" Samuel asked, and Howard snorted yet again, this time much more gently.
"You may not believe this, Samuel, but I've been buttoning my own shirt and tying my own shoes for, years now."
"Point taken," Samuel chuckled softly. "And I know you have. So go see to your errands. Supper tomorrow night at your place."
"It's a date," Howard said, then nodded to his brother and left.